How soon after that did the students start invading the embassy building as such?
It's really hard to remember. That's probably pretty well covered.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Within, you know, the next hour or 2 hours.
What do the students tell you about their purposes? You could communicate with them better than some of the staff members, I suppose.
I tried not to have to, but I guess I did.
Yeah, ultimately.
I was bound and blindfolded and not talked to by anyone. The next couple of hours just led over into an uncomfortable seat in the ambassador's residence and sat down, and that was that.
Uh-huh.
And nobody talked to us for the next couple of hours. They talked to me. So, didn't really have a chance to question them.
My impression is that the takeover was originally supposed to be symbolic and temporary. Did you get that?
We had the feeling it would be over soon, the students were dragged on.
Were there any indications that Khomeini knew about the plan to...
I'm sure he did.
There
were clergy with the students.
Now, Gary Sick argues that the Khomeini saw the hostage taking as a way to strengthen his hands against his opponents and win an upcoming referendum on a new constitution.
I think he's right.
To what extent would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. Khomeini is totally unsensible, and he would have used something like this quite quickly in India.
In general, how would you describe your experience as a hostage during 79 to 81? You could...
22nd time?
This is difficult to go over, you know, a week by week or day by day.
Excruciatingly boring.
Yeah.
Excruciatingly boring. Basically boring. Boring to the point where you wanted to scream from sheer and utter boredom. Dangerous at times, frightening at times, but in general, if the only basic emotion I had was boredom, occasionally amusing.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, I have to admit it, amusing.
What moments were amusing and what moments were frightening, if you care to talk about it?
Frightening was when you had young, frightened, rather stupid guards waving around automatic weapons, or threatening you with automatic weapons. I think these are not professionals, they were just young, frightened, and stupid, many of them. Some of them were vicious. Boring most of the time because there was sensory deprivation. You're sitting in a room with no windows and you haven't seen the sky or anything natural or anything green in 5 or 6 months.
So you went solitary, basically?
10 months.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And if you're sitting in a very, very small room, you know, just exactly big enough for a single mattress to go on the floor, that's exactly how big it was, the size of a large closet, for several months.
Why were you treated worse than the rest of the hostages?
People were treated at different times differently. I spoke Persian, and I had an awful lot of reports that I had signed sitting in various files. I also knew a lot of people. Mm-hmm. A lot of people knew me.
Mm-hmm.
They fought for the longest time, although they later realized they were wrong, and I didn't see a hand. Other things like that. And also because I was not particularly polite. Reasons of that sort. But basically, excruciatingly boring. What do you do all day when you can't do anything you want to do, when you have to sit on the floor or exercise or you sit up? This is not intellectually stimulating. When the only people you have to speak with are extraordinarily ignorant, uneducated, that's phenomenal. And that's all, you know, what I can say. Some of them were interesting. Some of them were entertaining at times.
What were their social backgrounds for the most part?
Lower class.
Basically
lower class. A couple who were not. A couple who had studied in the United States, who presumably had fairly decent education by Iranian standards, which is never very low for education.
Were most of them really students though, or not students, or just sort of?
Well, it's going to be most of the Iranian universities have been closed in 77 or 78. Yeah. You know,
that's true.
And what was a student?
Yeah.
Am I a student now or not? Yes, but you know. Amusing because amusing things would happen. Once in Evian prison, for example. I'm sorry, not in Evian prison, in the Comité prison that I was in.
In Tehran somewhere.
In Tehran, yeah. I had a roommate at that point for about a month, Dave Rader, who's the Air Force attaché. This prison had huge, I mean, sort of really heavy, clanking iron doors with little holes in them to look through, you know, from their side only. And the door would swing, and it sounded like something from an Edgar Allan Poe book. When the door would swing open, and the guard would come in, you never knew when they were going to be opened up. Just this awful grating noise, and the door would swing open. Well, one day, it was around dinner time or so, the door was suddenly swung open, and the guard apparently kicked it open after he had unlatched it from the other side because he was carrying the tray of food. But he kicked it, and the door swung so heavily it fell off its hinges. And this huge, heavy, several hundred pound iron door went crashing to the concrete floor. And Dave Rader and I just went into hysterical gales of laughter. The guard looked so silly, standing there with the food, looking at the door. And he got so mad because we were laughing so hard. But, you know, how could you help it?
Mm-hmm.
But things like that.
Mm-hmm. Was there some particular episode that had led you to make a decision to push you in solitary, or just as the general problems you referred to?
No, what happened in the very, very beginning, they isolated those of us who spoke Persian, as far as I know, and they discovered very quickly that I spoke Persian. And one of my stupid colleagues told them I was careful not to let anyone know and to only speak English. Figuring, quite rightly I believe, that I might be able to hear something that would either save my life or save me lots of trouble. But within about, the second day, they walked into a room where a lot of us were being held, you know, held and tied, and they were asking a question of one of the other men, Gisbialad, asked Matrenko. He speaks Persian really well. Why don't you ask him? I don't know. Oh, he does, and they just took me away.
Well, what did they say? What did the your captors say about their purposes? They don't give you an explanation of what their purposes were, and
to defeat the great Satan, basically. But they didn't know.
Sort of ideological, a lot of rhetoric.
Ideological basically. Can't.
They
didn't know, really.
Yeah.
They really didn't know. By the end of it all, or, you know, within a couple of months, a lot of them were heartily sick of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much the same people throughout.
Oh, yeah.
They
wouldn't have trusted anyone new on the showboat. Although they got rid of a lot of the original people, too.
Yeah.
They were Persians.
Yeah.
Riffs.
Were there any that really wanted to get this over with and just settle the dispute?
Oh, yeah.
But they were, sure. Was out of their control by that stage.
No, there were. At least one of them told me that. I'm sure there were others, too.
How much did you learn about developments outside of the embassy or wherever you happen to be?
Zilch. Yeah. Nothing at all whatsoever.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, you know, literally nothing about what was going on in Iran.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nothing about the political, you know, part of the United States. The letters that I got were very, very limited, and, you know, they very rarely gave me letters.
Yeah.
And the whole time I was there, I might have gotten about 15, although a couple of thousand were sent to me.
Yeah.
And in the letters I got, there was no news whatsoever about conditions in Iran or anything else. It was families, you know, sort of non-informational letters, just for thinking of you, things like that.
Did the Iranians tell you about the aborted hostage rescue mission?
No, they did not.
No.
We found out because one of the other guys in prison got the news somehow in a letter. And he passed it around. It was spread. People were changed just enough. You know, the roommate, the cellmate, but the news spread. And also, a little bit of it, I found out, for example, by reading, they gave me a copy once of the Sporting News. Not a newspaper that I would ever think of sitting down and reading here. I mean, you know, who reads sports trash like that? But in this, I would have read anything there, you know, cereal boxes I would have read if I could have. But in this particular one, one of the articles was about the great sort of game, a baseball game or something, at which the escaped Tehran, you know, embassy employees and the Canadian ambassador had been. And it didn't mention the name, it just said the seven who escaped, whatever name.
Mm-hmm. I think it was seven.
Yeah, the seven who escaped and the Canadian ambassador were present, and, you know, all the crowds went crazy and cheered, and I had no idea that this had happened. But that's how a lot of us found out, and then somebody sort of, that's how we found out from that article, I think.
But that had happened, yeah. But you had heard about the hostage rescue mission yourself?
No.
Because you were solitary, but others had.
Yeah. That took a long time to get passed around.
Yeah. How much did you learn later on, after you were and left Iran? How much later on did you learn about Eagle Claw, as the plan was called by its...
I know a great deal about it now, because I've read books on the subject, and I also know a number of people who took part in it. But that's not really a subject for comment.
Yeah. Can you say generally what you thought, what you thought about the plan?
I'd rather not comment on it at all.
Okay.
I really wouldn't.
Okay. What were this? Were you kept solitary up till the day you left Tehran in, I guess, mid-January 1981?
Or did you? Not the whole time.
Yeah.
I. For the first 2 days or so, I was mixed in with other people.
Yeah.
Then I was put in solitary and stayed in solitary from, let's say, the 6th or 7th of November, in solitary continuously until the rescue attempt at Tabas.
Till April 80.
That was November, December, January, February, March, April. On that day or the day after, when we were dispersed, I was taken down to the city of Qom. And there I was put into a prison with, it was a former Samak prison at first, with two other people from the embassy. It was the first time I had been with anybody since November. Mm-hmm. And really, I guess, the first time I had spoken English since November. Mm-hmm. At least on other than the guttural level.
Yeah. Things they won't understand.
Yeah, well, but, so, and had those roommates, three different people at various times, until, I'm trying to think, the whole time I was in Rome, that was just about 2 months or so, 2.5 months, we were then taken up to Tehran again, and for a while, to the old Comité prison. That's the name of the prison. It was that name before, you know, the revolution. And for the time that I was there, most of the time had cellmates, except that once I was put into a punishment cell for 2 weeks. And
what was the circumstances that led to that?
An argument with one of the guards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not even sure now what inspired it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, basically, go in there, sleep on the concrete floor for 2 weeks, you'll improve. Mm-hmm. Made me feel self-righteous. Self-righteousness makes you feel good for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then for the next 2 weeks, you feel really pissed at yourself having been so stupid. But then we were just trying to think of which other prisons I was in. That was that prison. We were then taken to a different prison. I've forgotten the name of it already. I'd have to check that, you know, on the old chronology of who went where.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But there at various times alone. Up in Evin prison, I was in a room by myself or a cell by myself most of the time.
What prison is this?
Evin, E-V-I-N. This is in the autumn and winter, 1980.
Into 81.
Into 81, but yeah. By, except that a couple of times I was allowed to talk to other prisoners in the yard, mm-hmm. and allowed on several occasions to talk to and to sit with Colonel Lee Holland, who was in the cell next to mine.
Maybe you mean with a MAG group or?
No, he yeah. was defense attaché.
Defense attaché, okay.
At office, yeah. Yeah. The army attaché.
Okay.
But
so prisoners were loosening up.
Then in the late winter of 1980, uh-huh. I was taken down. I was removed from that prison. I was thrown out of that prison, actually, literally. The guards had a strike against me, and they refused to come into my room anymore. So the head committee of the students had to remove me and take me down to the prison I had previously been in. They put me again into a solitary, into a punishment cell for 2 weeks.
And were you were there the day that you, up to the day you left?
No, stayed for 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I was removed from that one, because even they started feeling guilty about that after a while. After 2 weeks, anyway.
I should say so.
They removed me from that one, brought me back up to Evin. And I was in Evin for a short while, then taken, and I'm guessing just before Christmas it must have been, taken to our last holding place, which was an old guest house that had once been the home of Timur Bakhtiar, the founder of Sabah. It had been turned into the Prime Minister's guest house, and they had turned it into a prison by, you know, putting bars and metal plates on the windows, and that wonderful way they had of beautifying buildings. But there, the last month, I always had a roommate. Again, it was Dave Rayner, the Air Force Foundation, who is superbly intelligent and delightful to be with if you have to be in prison.
Did you know anything about the negotiations that were going on, or did you hear more about things as
a little bit more
through the course of 80, early 81?
We had some rather pathetic clergy come in, some Iranian, really pathetic clergy, I mean, Protestant clergy of some sort. But Iranians who thought they were doing God's work by giving us Christmas cookies. They're despicable people. They're really despicable.
Did some people from the United States come and visit the hostages? Isn't there Ramsey Clark or somebody like that?
No, Ramsey Clark never made it past Istanbul as far. I don't know.
Maybe I think it's something else.
What an idiot he was. And what a jerk. Isn't that bizarre? No, we had, at various times, various American clergy came through.
That's right. Yeah. That was about it. Yeah. Away visitors.
I'm trying to think of the infamous one from Kalamazoo or from Kansas or somewhere. Who came through, spoke to just a couple, basically followed the imam's line himself, came back here and did a number of talk shows talking about how well we were being treated. So, there were some wonderful comments made about him in prison, because we were all forced to watch the video one by one of his show. He did a show in Baltimore talking about how well we were being treated.
That's what I was appreciating.
The best comment on it was one of the Marine guards who yelled out, "Did you see so-and-so's video?" "Yes. They must have given him a blowjob." Marines are so earthy. Yeah, he was sort of a male Jane Fonda. Anyway, the last month, things were loosening up quite a bit. Not that we were getting any real news. Mm-hmm. We were suddenly getting a lot more mail. Mm-hmm. They gave us Christmas cards, stacks of Christmas cards. And would talk quite a bit more, suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as in, we haven't done anything wrong, etc., etc. You know, if you get out or when you get out,
you know, they're sort of trying to excuse themselves quite a bit, which was interesting. And then, of course, the last couple of days, you've suddenly had visits from the Algerian diplomats. Now they came through. Mm-hmm. A welcome sight, believe me. Absolutely welcome sight. I will always have a soft spot in my heart for the Algerians. Always.
I've read somewhere that the day that you all put on buses and taken to the airport outside of Tehran, that you, there was some, that you had some, there was some question whether you would make it yourself. Or
oh, yeah, I had some trouble on the bus.
Yeah.
It was actually stupid of me. I have a rather short temper. It has not improved over time either. But we were put on the bus, blindfolded, and we really didn't know where we were going. Didn't know if this was just another trip to some other prison or what. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They had told us to pack our things, but they had always told us to pack our things or being moved in the past. But, you know, packing things, I could have, I mean, everything I had to fit into a little paper bag. Mm-hmm. And basically meant another, you know, a change of underwear and one or two books. I had the books here, as a matter of fact. But we're put into the bus. I know I was in a bus because you could tell by the seats and, you know, walking down the aisle, but totally blindfolded. Mm-hmm. And told to sit down, told to shut up, as in shut up. And two of the Americans behind me started whispering to each other, and one of them said, you know, what's going on? Where are we going? You know, I don't know, that sort of thing. And the guard yelled from the front of the bus, and he said, shut up. Real loud, shut up. And then in Persian he said, Tadar Sohte Amrikari, which means it's just a curse in Persian, and it means, you know, you American bastards, basically. So in Persian I simply said, Khortakha Pesha, Pesara Jendeya Irani, which is basically, shut up yourself, you son of an Iranian prostitute. He took offense. And I got hauled off the bus and beaten up. And then they had, you know, the bus left. So they held me for a while, but then they had to send me out to the airport. I got a ride out in the Mercedes-Benz, which was the only way to go.
Still blindfolded?
Yeah. Apparently not. By this point, you know, I had the blindfold three quarters off, and they didn't care. They were sitting in the front seat, just sort of annoyed that I was... But, you know, if you're going to leave, you might as well leave in style. Why ride a bus when you can go out in the Benz? It was stupid of me. In retrospect, it was absolutely stupid. Because I didn't realize it then. It was different than some other people. I could have started an incident. I could have started somebody shooting or whatever. I just wasn't thinking. I have long since learned my lesson on that subject. It is better to not be stupidly macho, just to sit there and take things at times. This was not a time for making a stand.
Mm-hmm. Then you fell through the pipe Frankfurt, then back to Washington, right? What's that?
Algeria.
Oh, Algeria first. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Algerian plane to Algeria.
Yeah.
Transferred planes there after a short and very nice ceremony. And from Algeria to Wiesbaden. Wiesbaden for a couple of days. And then from Wiesbaden to... directly to West Point, to Stewart Air Force Base.
Okay.
And then West Point, and then to Washington, and then home.
Oh, I see. When you and your colleagues were brought back to Washington, shortly after Reagan's inauguration, was in an atmosphere of triumph. To what extent did you share in those feelings?
I was just very tired and wanted to go home.
Yeah.
And wanted all the hoopla to be finished.
Yeah.
You can't expect someone... Number one, none of us had any idea, certainly I did not, of the amount of emotional investment the American population had made in us. It wasn't possible for us or for me to comprehend. I would not have made that investment myself. And I couldn't understand how we had, I really did not. You know, I knew we were of concern to our families, our friends, to the government. But that was it. I have no comprehension of the extent, the depth, the magnitude of the emotion or the feelings, the anti-Iranian feeling. I mean, I got to Wiesbaden, and among others, I called up a lot of my Iranian friends to tell them I was out.
Mm-hmm.
It never occurred to me that this would be considered unusual. What can I say?
Yeah.
And that, you know, that was in the first day when we had, gee, free long-distance telephone calls all we can make. Gonna use this phone. I wasn't a student for nothing. Went out in Wiesbaden touring for a while with some American friends who lived in Germany. I just skipped out of the hospital. I didn't feel like staying in the hospital. I took off with them and did some touring. Came back, left with the group, and came to the United States. And, you know, still wasn't... I remember the pilots on the plane asking for our autographs. And I had no idea why. And I really didn't understand why. And, you know, things like that didn't sink in for a while. But you have to understand that I had been for 14 months in a situation, up until then in Iran, in a very tense political, emotional situation. During that 14 months, in very, very isolated, sort of, you know, sensorily deprived, you know, circumstances, with either no light or no windows or no access to the outside, no ability to just go out and walk, to see a tree or a bush, right? Nothing like that at all for the whole time. And to suddenly bring us to Wiesbaden and keep us in the hospital, and then 2 days later, 3 days later, expose us to millions of people, the transition was difficult. Everybody made it, but it was a difficult thing to ask of us. When you say share in the triumph, I was not in the mood to share in the mass reaction or emotion of, you know, any group.
I have no further questions. Thank you very much for your time.
You're more than welcome.